Okay. Guess who is back in the shed?
Hello.
Eva's back from her Italian adventures.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty magical. I didn't really want to come back.
I was going to say, why'd you come back?
Why? Because I had a return ticket.
Oh, geez. That good, huh?
Well, you know, it's just the food and the people and the things you can see. The walkable cities.
All things you can say
about... Very walkable cities.
About Portland. I'm just kidding. Okay, tell me about some of the... You got to give us the 411
some highlights.
On your trip.
Like, well, so here's bing, the scene. Bing, set bang, boom. Like, okay, so Leslie and I were meeting our friends, Analia and Danielle, who usually live in Peru, and we've been traveling with them before. So we went to Mexico City with them last year. And we met them in Rome and made our way from Rome to Florence to Bari, which is in Puglia on the heel of the boot. And then we did a lot more traveling than I usually would do. And we went to Genoa in the north, kind of in the, I don't know, left armpit of Italy.
Wow.
Because Akche, who's Leslie's friend through the photo world, who usually lives in India, was there. So it was like, you know, you got to make the journey.
Yeah.
So we hung out with him and his wife, Marig, and that was awesome. Genoa is a very cool city, like hilly port town with lots of interesting people and food. And
it's Genoa, like so historic.
It's got, yeah, I mean.
Everything there is historic.
Yeah. Stone cities.
Wow.
We had a wine tasting in this place. So this woman who was the librarian, this study abroad school that I went to 20 years ago, works at this cool, like, sort of hotel, but it's in a 10th century tower.
Oh.
Oh.
Wow. Okay.
And the woman who owns the tower, like, also owns a winery out in Tuscany. And so they have, like, wine tastings every day at 5 o'clock. So we got a wine tasting, and then we got the story about the tower and how it used to be taller, but there was this like man fight that happened in the 14th century and everyone's towers had to be cut down to size.
What?
Yeah, basically.
To
like,
be lower than some other guy's
mm-hmm,
tower?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Oh my gosh. A man fight. War?
A man fight.
Man fight.
Well, I think it was a little more genteel. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
That sounds absolutely fantastic.
There weren't any cannons fired.
Yeah. I mean, not the fight part doesn't sound that great, but the trip, oh my gosh.
The trip was
so
great.
Good.
Yeah.
Oh, and all the little things in between. What kind of traveler are you?
I'm like pretty low-key.
Really?
Lots of walking. Really? No.
Like
one or two things every day.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
We are very like food focused mm-hmm. people. So
not a ton of like pre-bought like plans.
No,
and like tours.
We did do that. We did a few. We did one museum where we pre-bought tickets because they had just reopened after being closed for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that was cool. La Specola, which is sort of like a natural history museum in Florence.
And you're both art adjacent.
We're both art adjacent.
Artists.
Well, so Leslie, my wife used to work. She worked a year in Florence. Maybe 10 years ago, and we both studied abroad there in 20 years ago.
So, oh, that's so great. That's the best because
we have like connections and people to visit with. And
yeah, that's great. Italians.
Italians.
Which is the mm-hmm. best way to,
yeah.
A good way to travel, to have folks that are from the area, right?
Yeah.
Wow, that sounds, so how'd you get around mostly?
By foot, by train. We did take one airplane.
In Italy, really? So,
and the bus.
Yeah, a lot of buses.
I added up how many miles walked. 98 miles walked in 2 weeks.
What?
Yeah.
Were your feet comfortable?
Yeah.
What? It's immediately where my mind goes. Sorry.
It's fine. You know, no, it's totally reasonable. I bought new shoes before I went because, yeah.
And Italy's like, it's a beautiful, nice, walkable place, but hard in terms of like
stone.
Up, down, stone. Constantly mm-hmm. stepping over something, right?
Yeah.
From what I hear, I've not been to Italy, I don't think. Yeah.
But if any like old medieval sort of cities are going to have.
Cool.
Yeah.
And you came back. I'm feeling like, I don't know. The shed's a little underwhelming right now.
Oh, sorry.
It doesn't quite
no,
live
it's
up.
Great. It's great to be home. It's like the most incredible weather here in Portland right now.
It is. Spring. And you got sick when you came back, and now you're over that. So now you're just ready to party and enjoy the sun.
Ready to party. Well, in a week, we're leaving to go to Nebraska.
Oh, they party there too.
Yeah.
Nebraska. You have fun
with
there.
Corn.
Yeah.
Corn and cows.
What's the weather like in Nebraska right now?
I have no idea.
Oh.
I should probably
just
look.
Just jumping right in.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I know this is the classic thing in Portland where when the weather gets nicer, I feel like that's when like we tend to like plan to like do our trips to see people and stuff. And so then you leave, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we're going to, yeah, I got a bunch of trips all of a sudden planned coming up. So it's going to be an interesting couple months. Yeah.
What's new in Portland?
Nothing at all. Nothing is new. See, you left, middle of last month? No.
Yeah. Middle of February.
Middle of February. Yeah, I had a few other people sitting in here. And
I know. You have Michael Anderson, who I have, like, he's Michael. Great.
I was just listening to him on Think Out Loud, talking about housing. And, you know, since I had him here in the shed, OPB called him up.
Of course.
You know, obviously. He's the toast of the town now. Stephen Green was also in here. But, you know, actually, lots did happen. As you could tell, if you scrolled through the headlines on Bike Portland, there's always...
There's always something.
Always something. Always something. How do we find ourselves in the middle of stuff constantly? I don't know. That's just the nature of the beast. But
the release of Peabot's new bike counts.
Yeah, the bike
that
counts.
That happened.
The full report.
The full
which
report.
Which is fun. I've been mining that for story
up
fodder.
From last year, but still.
A little bit.
Just sad.
It's been fun to see the, like the headlines.
It's hard, though, to still see how far down it is from pre-pandemic.
Yeah, especially when you look at the... I've been looking at like the Excel spreadsheet over time of all the different locations. And it's like, it's so hard for my eyes not to move further to the right and like see the like multiple thousand rider a day differences. And even the most popular spots to ride. It's like, wow, we really had 6,000 people a day at so-and-so. And now it's down to 2,000. That's hard to look at. But, as I predicted, it did go up this time.
Maybe we're all just biking in the dead of night.
Could be. There's a night biking crew that's not getting counted.
The Midnight Mystery Ride
but
crew.
Roger Geller, the guy that's sort of the caretaker of the counts to some degree for many, many, many years, would say that his counts reflect even the secret midnight bikers with their extrapolative algorithm that backs up their contention that they're...
Extrapolative algorithm.
I made that up to credit, you know, I don't want to get Roger in trouble, but... No, it's like, I was always thinking like, how do you take a 2 hour peak count and honestly extrapolate that into saying that's how many daily riders there are. But turns out that is how the automobiling world has always done it, right? Because motor vehicle counts are just a standard thing that have always been happening since whenever. And so that's where they kind of got it and they've done it. And Roger's telling me they've actually run the numbers and it measures out also for biking in terms of a full day extrapolation, even after, all the changes from COVID, and peak hour to some people is like moot. Cause it's like, what does that even mean? But it's still,
well, yeah. Also because the workforce is no longer as measurable in this way, you know, like it used to be, we were sort of measuring the 9-to-5 folks that work downtown. I mean, is that not true? But that was the focus of the bike counts to a certain degree.
Well, they were measuring bike trips. It just so happened that obviously, you know, the 9-to-5 workforce people made up a huge part of the trips. I mean, obviously that's part of why the decline has happened. But I think what Roger's point is, and the point of the bike counts, if you look at it, is for the most part, the locations are determinant. Like if you look at some of the places with big dips or things that have weathered and been more resilient in terms of trip count, the places that are like what you'd look at and say has a strong recreational trip generation have been more resilient, right? Like if you look at the top 10 counts, right? I think three of them are on the Springwater within a few blocks. So those counts have been stronger, and that's probably a reflection of, you know, work trip stuff. But in Roger's mind, from what I've talked to him about, the change in work from home, it hasn't like rendered all their count locations completely meaningless.
Sure.
You know, they still hold up. They also have different locations that they go to, right? There's 250 or so, 270 locations where they go. So anyway, don't necessarily need to belabor the underlying thing.
Right.
And folks can look up the count report, which is linked to on Bike Portland, to see all the methodology and all that stuff. But they're really great to have because they're such a great resource to sort of mine for information. Speaking of which, who's interested in hearing the top 10 locations?
Well, there's only one of us in the room with you. So I'm going to say.
Anybody? The crowd?
I am.
Let's see. I don't know if any of these will be surprises for folks. And I'll probably be sharing these later today on the site with a little Google map that folks can like click around. But let's go. Let's go from 10 to 1. All right. It's a little suspense. What do you think?
Yeah.
Start with the number 10.
Do you need like fake drum roll when we get to number 3, 2, 1?
I mean, you know, there's technology where I could just like plop that in.
Yeah, right.
Okay, number 10. These are, according to the 2023 PBOT bicycle counts, the top 10 bicycling intersections okay. in the city.
Mm-hmm.
This is citywide. So number 10 is Southeast Carruthers and East Bank Esplanade.
Okay.
With mm-hmm. 2010 trips per day. So that's, you know, right.
That's where by OMSI.
Yeah. By the Opera.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where the path empties out into that cul-de-sac, which is now painted with the beautiful piano.
Yeah.
Melodic interpretation of paint intersection there. Location number 9. Southwest NATO at the Morrison Bridge.
Okay.
With 2060 trips per day. You can see that. Obviously, it has nothing to do with Morrison since nobody rides the Morrison Bridge anymore.
I think I've done it once.
Exactly. It's all about NATO, better NATO. I think NATO was featured. Oh, I'm actually, that's the only time in the top 10. I'm okay. A little bit surprised at that. But then again, with the hollowing out of Central City and not as many people being down there, it would have been interesting.
I feel like there are a lot fewer people on NATO.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what's fun. If you look at this over time, or if you want to think about it in the future years, like what will happen with certain things come online, you can always, anyway, it's fun. Okay. That was number 9. Number 8 is back to the Springwater Trail just near Ivan. So Ivan is like the last street that Splendid Cycles is on right before you get to the entrance to the, mm-hmm. to the actual Springwater. I was wrong where I was thinking about it. It's actually on the Springwater Trail just south of Ivan. So basically right at the entry point. That's what it is. 2,115 trips per day, according to PBOT.
Mm-hmm.
Makes a lot of sense. Number 7 is the only one in the top 10 in Northwest. Northwest Lovejoy and 9th.
Okay.
With 2,135 trips per day. Number 6, North Interstate and Lloyd. Good old Peace Park.
Okay.
Everybody knows mm-hmm. that. The 5th busiest bicycling intersection, I think, is the first one on here that's like a residential area. So Southeast Clinton and 34th.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Props to the Clinton Neighborhood Greenway showing up twice, actually, in the top 10. And 34th, there's a little market there. That's the one, there's like a market on the corner.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Number 5. So the 5th busiest is North Williams and Russell.
Okay. For sure.
2,200 trips per day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 4th place is Southeast Harrison and Ladd. So Ladd Circle.
Of course.
Gotta have. You knew Ladd
Circle. I did. I was on a ding ding ride when they were counting. And Armando was like, we're just going to loops in front of the people counting.
I'm sure.
So
we
might have skewed the count just a tiny bit.
They have to have a way to account for that.
I'm sure. The people were laughing.
Yeah.
With their little clipboards.
Yeah, they definitely don't. I'm sure they just like X'd out that whole time, that whole entire time. Okay, third place, South Moody and Gibbs.
Okay.
That is mm-hmm. not surprising whatsoever.
Yeah.
2,400 trips per day. That's like the petri dish of Portland planning. Central right there with the tram and the bike valet and all that other stuff.
It does feel like the future over there.
It sort of totally does.
Or like Vancouver, BC. I don't know.
Mm, yeah.
Something about like the height of the buildings and all of that. Like
yeah, for sure.
Fresh concrete and green.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic. Although I don't see that one really, nothing's going to really change that location much in the future.
Yeah.
That I can see it's kind of built out. Like for instance, Williams and Russell, actually just a couple days ago, I don't know if you missed it, but they finally inked a deal for like $115 million development at Williams and Russell. Finally, mm-hmm. you know, where the hospital took over that land and finally. Never developed it. So like in a couple of years, that count location may be totally different. You're adding a ton of, you know, housing and other.
And that was like brokered with the Albina Vision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can do a whole episode on all the Albina Vision Trust news. Mm-hmm. But let's stick to the top 10 and then we'll maybe
okay.
chat about some of that.
Okay.
Okay. Second place, back to Clinton. Mm-hmm. Clinton in 26th.
Not surprised.
Not surprised. Clinton Street Theater intersection. And number one, back to the Springwater Esplanade, Carruthers and 4th. It's just a block away from, what was it? What?
Yeah, right
number
by
11.
The opera.
Did I just do 11? I think I might have done 11. That's fine. I picked all of them that had 2,000 or more trips.
Okay.
But that last one, Carruthers and 4th, which is number one by far, almost 1,000 trips more than second place, has 3,415 trips per day by bike.
Dang.
So there you go. So there are three right there in the top 11, I guess, to correct myself.
That's where I'm going to put in my vending machine with tubes and chain loop.
Is that how you're going to pay the bills?
Yes.
Retired vending machine.
All I need is an outlet.
That might be hard to find out there on the
long
street.
Long extension.
Solar power.
Extension cord.
Solar powered.
Well, solar power, yeah.
Bicycle accessory vending machines dotting the spring water. See, that's actually not an absurd idea. If you look at all the strange things they're thinking about to like power the EV electric car future, right? Where they're like bending over to like make sure that you can plug in your car at any moment's notice.
Yeah. People with range anxiety, you know, they need to know that there's power somewhere.
Yes. You never hear about that much anymore. Range anxiety.
Range anxiety. Yeah. It's gone underground.
Gone underground. Yeah. Yeah, I read something that like if you're talking about electric cars, plug-in hybrids are actually better for the environment and like kind of winning out overall than full EV battery cars. But I'm not thinking about that at all.
Why
I'm
would you?
Of e-bikes.
E-bikes.
Yeah, I mean, you know. The
well, I think about what about, you know,
10%,
think about 50%. The range that you get on an e-bike and how much yeah. more willing you're going to be to go across town.
Yeah, for sure. Changes everything. There's a cool line in the Bike Count report about how the prevalence of e-bikes that they counted was so significant that it should something like it should change the way we think about, you know, distance and planning bikes in the future and blah, blah, blah. It's like, oh, yeah. Where'd they get that idea?
That's fair.
Just kidding.
I mean, I have always felt like sometimes the bike planning people don't always take into account hills and like the way that I want to avoid a hill riding a non e-bike. You know, sometimes I'll take a different route because of that.
Yeah. No, they do take it into account to some degree yeah. when they're mapping out routes. I mean, I actually wrote a whole thing about this on Bike Portland a year or so ago, how e-bikes have changed everything and we really need to think about it. How much of our planning is based on just traditional bikes without motors mm-hmm. and how that might change if we really embrace the idea that so much more, I bet by the next time they count them, it'll be a quarter of the people. And then, I mean, that number's going to just keep going up. And what does that mean about the kind of streets that PBOT thinks can be bike streets and which one shouldn't be bike streets, you know? So yeah, lots of stuff there, but I didn't go to happy hour this week. It was my boy's 13th birthday. So I opted out to stay home, but I was so desperate to like talk to people about all this freaking news that happened this week around the I-5 Rose Quarter Project, Albina Vision Trust, like it just was like one thing after another. It was this huge Friday news dump.
Yeah.
Last, you know, Friday ago. Anyway, and then it
you
just
you said
kept
nothing
coming.
Happened.
Oh, I was, you know, things are always happening.
Portland.
I was just in a meeting today where people were just like, yeah, we don't even know. Someone from Metro was just like, the whole tolls thing just being shelved. They're like, yeah, we basically don't know what that means. It's so wild. I don't think I've ever seen a program that was like that big of a deal and had that much work done, right? Like you had ODOT holding open houses all over the state. You had all these nonprofits that were paid to go get feedback from certain communities that whatever, right? And then yeah. you wake up and the governor's like, you know what? We're not doing that right now. So huge, huge news, which I mean, it's kind of exciting if you didn't trust ODOT to spend it responsibly because they just lost that, you know? So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm sure you were reading it. Well, you were already home, so you wouldn't have missed
it. I've been reading some stuff.
Yeah. Oh, you have?
Books, you know, the occasional article on Bike Portland.
Yeah, yeah.
Or,
yeah.
you know. yeah. Taylor Gregg's take.
Yeah. Good summary of everything that's been happening over on the Mercury. By the way, Taylor also started a new transportation column.
Oh, dang.
Yeah.
Way to
go. She's calling it Street View. Great name. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Google will be happy about it, but it's called Street View. I don't know if she's going
to
rant.
Google doesn't really like to share.
I think it's a place to let so that Taylor can feel like she can just rant, you know, basically.
That's great.
Which you know, she needs. They should just let her cover transportation. I don't know. Maybe it's a way for the Mercury to just be like a little less. I don't know why it has to be a column, but it's good. More.
Well, because then it's a regular, like, that's what they're covering. That's going to be
the. Yeah, true. Good. I don't know how things work at the Mercury.
So. Oh, I don't either.
So that's fun. But yeah, so no more tolls. At least, so people should know, she didn't say no more tolls, actually.
Oh, no.
She said the regional mobility pricing program, which to watch ODOT try to come up with naming.
We need a new word for toll.
It started as the value pricing feasibility analysis, and then it turned into, once they realized it was feasible, and they did the analysis and paid all the consultants millions of dollars to figure out if it was feasible. Then they launched the regional mobility pricing program, which was just for I-205 and I-5 in the Portland Metro. That's what the governor said needs to be shelved. So mm-hmm. tolling as a tool for ODOT is definitely still a thing. They're going to definitely do it on the interstate bridge replacement project they're doing and other places. So I think some people reading the headlines in the last week are thinking
we should do it like Netflix and Hulu and have, if you don't want to pay a toll, you have to wait and like watch ads for a minute.
Oh, yeah. And the ads would be like, you should ride your bike more.
And then you get to go.
Yeah.
I'd and like everyone that. Else pays their dollar, $2, whatever
if,
it is.
Yeah. I'm all for it. Like if we have the tech in the car to have like speed governors and stuff and everybody's got, I mean, a lot of cars have just software updates you can do anyway. Just blare an ad inside their car that disables the engine for a sec. I love that. I'm sure that'd be non-controversial.
Of course.
But anyway, that was a huge thing. I mean, it wasn't, and actually I was actually pretty proud of myself because when I heard the news, often I'll like go scouring through the Bike Portland archives to see like, how can I pick up a thread that we've already started or like, what will I link back to in my coverage of that thing that just happened? And I was like, literally pretty predictable. If you read Bike Portland closely in the last year or so, I mean, there was a story in there I wrote about how I was like noticing that lawmakers down in Salem were not okay with the tolls.
Yeah. Cause so many people don't like tolls.
Yeah.
People
but not just the usual suspects, not just so like, I don't want to pay, but like even like the biggest, you know, in a way, one of the biggest transportation champions down there, a RepCon fam, mm-hmm. serious concerns based on, which is kind of where I come from, which is like, it's a trust issue with ODOT.
Right.
It's like giving a teenager your wallet. Like you just don't. Their history is so bad with just being like good stewards of money to some degree, I think, and lying about stuff and, you know. Not super trustworthy in terms of what they were wanting to do with the money. And I think, honestly, ODOT was really happy that it got called off. I don't think that the upper ODOT brass wanted to do it. And I think they're happy to have the pressure off. And I kind of think they slow walked it a little bit just so it could languish and create more controversy and all that. I think if there was real professional urgency at ODOT to get tolling done, it would have probably not had to get stalled like this. So I think they're pretty happy that they don't have to deal with it anymore, at least in that one, in the Portland region, which they know that's where.
I always think of Oregon as this sort of like libertarian, like frontier state where freeways are freeways. And that's when I heard that they were even like trying to do tolling, I was like, shit, okay.
Yeah.
Go for it.
I mean, it's.
You go to California and it's like everywhere, you know, you just drive on a road and you get a bill in the mail.
I know. And part of me is like frustrated that a lot of Oregonians now and a lot of people that follow this are like, yeah, see, we told you tolls are terrible, dumb, blah, blah, blah. And they think it's like, I follow some folks online who are, I'll say more right leaning that are like, oh, this is a win for Republicans. And we pushed back tolling.
But
sorry. And
I always wonder, what do they think?
Well, yeah. And I'm like,
is driving free? Should driving be free?
Yeah, exactly. Well, people would say that they already pay enough, I think. But I love that what the governor's announcement does is it does force some of these conversations, right? ODOT, they still have to find a way to pay for a lot of stuff, which I kind of like watching them have to squirm, because it's their choices to build the most expensive, largest things they can possibly build at every turn. Mm-hmm. And I'm part of the chorus that's saying, right size yourself and right size your agency, and don't always go for the massive mega project and just, you know, like with the Interstate Bridge, go ahead and just replace the bridge. Don't do all the other stuff. With the Rose Quarter, go ahead and do all the surface street and revitalize Albina. Don't do the freeway expansion. But no, they always want the most expensive thing. And then they're always pleading poverty about, you know, how are we going to fund it? So it's fun. I was wanting to do like a, I'm not really good at memes or funny posts. I'm just not.
Just hire a teenager.
Gosh, I know. I'm missing so much attention on the internet. If I could just be funny with these memes. But I was thinking of one in my head of being like something how you're excited, or like you're happy you don't have to pay tolls. Like, and then look at all the other stuff you're going to pay. Like, there's going to be all kind of other ideas coming out of ODOT in the next year that folks are going to just hate even more, probably, yeah. You know, charging by the mile, little dongles in your car that are just going to automatically tick, mm-hmm. you know, how much you go, and it's going to just come right off your bill and the DMV.
Registration is $600 a year.
Yeah. And it gets back to what you said about people just think you just drive and don't pay for stuff. Like, what kind of madness is that?
Yeah. We could just have mud roads, yeah. You know, ruts everywhere.
Yeah. That's what we used to have before the cyclists organized and lobbied for paved roads. And look where it got us. Boy, that was a mistake. We should have just kept the roads muddy.
We should probably go back in our time machine.
We should. Let's go break up some roads. That'd be a good protest.
I mean, the thing of roads have been around a minute or two.
Well, and not around these parts. 100
well, sure,
years or so.
Sure.
150 years. Portland.
Yeah.
Mudtown. Anyway. So there was that. And then Albina Vision Trust. I mean, they might as well just subsume ODOT anyways. And just, that's my theory of what will happen with the Rose Quarter, is that ODOT will become just a small player. And they'll own the air, you know, the lease rights above the freeway. And then Albina Vision Trust and there's going to be a commission that's going to manage the governance of of whatever happens down in Lower Albina, especially above the caps, right? Mm-hmm. And that commission, along with City of Portland, since they'll be working a lot on the surface street stuff, I'm thinking will kind of take a central role, and there'll be a deal strike. I'm doing a prediction here, folks, by the way. I think it's possible that the freeway doesn't get built, the freeway expansion, and that the caps get built, obviously. That will happen. I just don't see a political future for the freeway part of it. I don't know. I want someone to convince me I'm wrong on that. But
yeah, I mean, they keep touting this high crash corridor, and I'm like, no one dies here.
Yeah.
How, you know, is where is the statistic? Like, how significant is that? And P.S., like, how much mess are we going to create just building this? Like, how much delay? How terrible is it going to be for 3 years because they're doing construction?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, that part's going to be rough regardless of what they build.
Well, sure.
Yeah. And according to ODOT in their environmental assessment, the only negative environmental impacts will be temporary during construction, because they think they can build this.
There will be some dust.
Yeah, that's literally what.
No, I read a little bit of it, and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's kind of hard to fathom. The one good thing that the freeway part of the project has going for it is that it's another $1 billion, and it's a big project. And there's a huge, interesting dynamic of pressure around creating wealth for Black people and Black community, and creating construction jobs. And folks are ready to get those jobs and that money. And so I think that is a positive for ODOT politically, because there's a lot of people who can make a lot of money. But in terms of, you know, ODOT's rationale for building the freeway, I just don't think it stands up to scrutiny yet. I mean, they used to talk about, yeah, relieve congestion, like in 2017 when they got the legislature to approve the money for it, it was like, relieve this bottleneck. But especially since COVID and the shift in driving going down so much, and they never really proved that. And then once Albina Vision Trust came onto the scene and was like, yo, we got this great idea everybody loves, ODOT stopped talking about that other rationale, and then only started talking about reconnecting Albina.
Right.
So much so that they rebranded the entire project. Literally, the graphics changed. They got rid of a community advisory group and turned it into something else. a huge shift. And so even ODOT, I think, knows that the freeway part doesn't have the, you know, the political juice. So I'm fascinated to see what happens next, how they, if they try to weasel back the freeway widening part, if Albina Vision Trust sees the same opening that I see, which is for them to orient themselves in a way that's like, hey, this is our project now, and we don't really need the freeway expansion. Mm-hmm. They don't, by the way, if anybody's listening, they, you can look back on Bike Portland. Since the beginning, we were the first people to cover Albina Vision Trust. And even from the first story, they were saying, you know what? We don't really care if the freeway gets expanded, but we're doing our thing, you know? So now that they got their cap money, at least most of it, I think the caps are still, I mean, they can't build the caps with $450 million.
Yeah.
I think that's probably half the caps. So they're going to still need to raise
more
money.
And what role does like the Blazers and the Moda Center have in this whole affair?
Well, they're a big, big old gorilla in the mix, right? Because they have so much money and power. And ODOT certainly leans on them for approval and endorsement to make it look like the project has support. ODOT's really good at that. And they just recently came out with a whole thing. I guess they had to re-sign some kind of bridge agreement with the Moda Center, like the city had to or something. And ODOT was a part of that. Anyway, they've worked behind the scenes a lot with the Moda Center people and the Blazer folks to get them to say, yes, this project is something we support. Because it came out in the paper, you know, whatever, a year and a half ago or so, that turns out the Blazers weren't excited. Because one of the ways they want to exit southbound I-5 traffic goes right through the heart of where everybody walks to the Blazer games, right? Yeah. There on Winning Way.
Totally. It's a mess. It's a clusterfuck.
It's a total mess, right? And it's like, we're at this stage of the project where... I think ODOT at one point had already said they would have broken ground, but so like it's pretty far along. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the plans, it still just seems like such a mess. That's why I keep talking about like the freeway aspect of it not having, it just doesn't seem to really pencil out to me in a lot of ways. I just keep seeing how much trouble ODOT's in with the freeway part of it. And so I'm feeling pretty good that freeway is not going to get widened right through the heart of Portland, but I could be wrong and naive and silly. So we'll have to see.
We'll have to see.
What would they do in Italy?
What would they do in Italy? Well, my favorite part about Italy is how projects just take as long as they take. It's sort of like they have a start date maybe, and then it's done when it's done. Freeways are a thing. I mean, certainly there are a lot of car. I mean, Italians love their cars. Not gonna lie, Italians love their cars. But also, they've done a lot to change the way the central cities in many of these older towns. No, you need special permits to drive in certain areas. They have these like pedestrian areas, they call them, where during the day, often no cars are allowed. And then after, say, 11 p.m., you can drive through. So they're getting deliveries and stuff like before 6 in the morning or after 11 at night. And so there's a lot of work around just keeping the central city clear. None of these cities have freeways going right through the middle of them, you know? It's also like a lot of them are older and have these deep histories. So the car didn't exist when that city was built.
Yeah.
You know, you have these walled cities where...
Well, neither did
you can't
ours.
Even drive a truck through. I'm always surprised when I see like a semi driving down some residential street in Portland and I'm like, what are you doing? Where are you going? I don't understand why we don't have more distribution centers on the outskirts and then smaller trucks that exist within the city.
Yeah. That's, you'd think that'd be a basic thing. But I mean, Portland didn't have massive trucks and freeways either at the start, and
sure,
ODOT rammed it through.
Yeah, well, the 60s,
we did crazy stuff here. Mm-hmm. This country is weird. You're right. Like, why do we have big trucks rumbling through? Like right here on Rosa Parks,
yeah,
massive trucks will rumble through there. It's really only because those freaking manuals that dictate how roads are built in America, right? They're always built.
Well, you were the one animals. Reading about Robert Moses.
Yeah.
Is it his fault?
I mean, no. Not technically, but it's, in a way, it's the culture of, you know, people like that. working for cities that did, you know, don't put enough, you know, barriers around how you can build stuff and just think that it's okay. Or it's like all hail mighty commerce and just like, you know,
well, yeah, I think that is it. Stuff. Money. It's, yeah. It's just,
I mean, it's,
we see these big trucks and we see dollar signs and we see a forest and we see dollar signs. And
I mean, on that note, and speaking of the Rose Quarter stuff, mm-hmm. one of the stories I came across in my research this week, it's so gross to me how the freight, like the, what's the word? Just like, there's just no shame. They just think that what they do should just be held harmless, like just do whatever they want because, like we were just saying, it's money. Hey, and like the things that they'll do, like they were arguing a couple years ago that they didn't want to pay for the restorative justice of Albina because they didn't do it. Mm-hmm. This is the head freight advocate, like the most powerful freight advocate in the state and locally. She was worried at a meeting. They were talking about restorative justice. Yeah. And she's like, well, I just want to make sure everybody, hey, I care about all this stuff, but you know, truckers should not have to pay at all for this because we didn't do it. And I'm just like, and then they go into the thing of like, what we do is so important. Like, don't you want your package there the next day? Well, then stand down. And I just find that so disgusting, you know, frankly.
I mean, I think we could do a much better job of prioritizing freight over pedestrian, over like single occupancy cars.
Yeah.
And things could get there more efficiently, faster. And then we also should do more to say, like, these are not roads that big trucks should drive on. These are roads for small cars, pedestrians, bicycles. Like, I don't know. I would love to see stronger taxes on car size.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not just talking about freight, but talking about SUVs and the disgusting bloat of cars in America.
Yeah. I wonder if anybody's really going to work on that for the coming session because everybody in the transportation world in Oregon is getting all their ducks in a row for the 2025 legislative session because it's going to be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, maybe $1 billion of a transportation package. It's going to be really big, right? Mm-hmm. I was reading some documents this week where, I mean, yeah, trust me, people are lining up to get their ideas out, to get their policies lined up so they can get a part of this big package, right? And I wonder if there's anybody in the advocacy world who's really going to take up that point of some kind of new tax structure for larger cars. I know, obviously, since we were talking about tolling being, you know, not happening like ODOT would like, I think that's another reason why.
Yeah.
That it's a good idea that people should figure out how to turn that into some kind of policy package and do the legwork it takes to really make it into some legislative language because yeah, it's time to kind of start getting smarter of taxation on these big cars for sure. And I think next session might be the time to go for it, especially since ODOT is just so desperate and hungry for more funding. So
then while we're at it, let's tax studded tires or just ban them.
Yeah. I think that issue's kind of worked its way. It's worked itself out with fewer people using the studs and more people using the traction tires.
Snow tires, yeah.
So that was good because there was a lot of work on that for a couple of years. But it's going to be so interesting to see how the session plays out in the coming year. And it's going to start this spring and summer. There's people working on like a big statewide tour. So all the big wigs that down in Salem are going to be coming to a town near you to talk about your transportation priorities.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're there. It's going to happen. And when that happened in 2017, I distinctly remember it was called the Governor's Visioning Panel on Transportation. And oh,
did
boy.
Did they do vision boards?
Oh, it was so bad. I never did an article on Bike Portland about it, and I regret that. But I followed it a little bit and watched it. It was just the most classically ODOT state thing. Like no one was ever invited to those that like were in my circles, let's say. It was just the same kind of people standing around talking about, like we were just saying, how freight needs to get everywhere and efficiency and bottlenecks and all that stuff, right? It was like nothing interesting. And so that's the, you know, 2017 package came out and basically had a few crumbs for, you know, safe routes and transit so that the advocates could call it a win. But for the most part, it was a massive highway bill. That can't happen this time around. There's no way that's happening if I have anything to say about it. So this time, they're starting that tour up again this summer. So I can't wait to see how that shakes out, because basically every move they make, you know, myself and a lot of other people will be analyzing it very closely.
Yeah.
To see how it shakes out in terms of building a narrative, you know, for the big coming package. And trust me, the trucking folks are definitely building their narrative, so much so that they've already sued ODOT preemptively, because they feel like they're already paying too much.
Okay.
And there's some data that shows that the way that the state calculates who pays for what and the weight mile tax and all that stuff could be better. It's not quite dialed mm-hmm. in. And so I think the freight advocates saw that and realized it was a great political point to make, that they're being overcharged. So now they're going to go for it. And really, it's not only they want lower fees on their trucks, which is okay, whatever, let's look at the numbers, but they will really like try to push the narrative that other people need to pay more too. And I actually saw the word e-bike in some of the docs I was looking at, and it's predicated under this idea that motorists and truckers are paying too much, I think, is essentially the main takeaway. So we're going to be having conversations about how much should EV drivers pay for a tax? How much should e-bike riders pay for a tax? How much should, we already know the legislature's willing to tax bike purchases.
Right.
So all that stuff is going to be on the table. I guarantee you there will be slides that show, it's going to say something like, Governor Kotek says no tolling in Portland region, so we need to find alternate things. And that little, there's going to be a bullet point that says bicycles. And that's going to be fun conversation. You know, should our state be looking to squeeze money out of bike riders when they're trying to, I don't know, build all their crazy stuff? I'm all for it if they build really cool stuff for bikes, you know, or good transit lines. Like, yeah, let's do it, right? But that's never really been on the table.
Yeah.
It's not, it's the same thing when people come to me and talk about licensing and registration. I'm like, I like to surprise them and be like, oh, I'm totally for that. Mandatory licensing for bikes. Absolutely. As long as it comes with the same
benefits.
Sort of, yeah. The same institutional or respect some sort that of, driving gets.
Like if my bike gets stolen, I get it back.
Yeah. You willing to change the name of it from Department of Motor Vehicles to like Department of Vehicles and fully embrace bicycles? And I'll be happy to sign up for a license if I got all that, but don't try to regulate me, right? It's like taxation without representation.
Right.
I'm not doing it. So let's see what else. Well, how are you going to enjoy the sun, Eva?
Well, I've been out in the garden.
Good.
I threw some arugula seeds and radish seeds into the ground. Garlic's very happy coming up from the fall.
Yum.
Got some leeks and a few fava beans that survived the horrific winter.
Ooh, yeah.
What else? Maybe I'll go for a bike ride. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I haven't been riding my bike.
No.
Since
you walked over here, didn't you?
I walked.
Wow.
I'm into walking now.
You said that with such a posture, like you're boasting or something. Like, you're trying to challenge me.
pro walking, and I vote.
Okay. Yeah. That's fine. You can walk.
Yeah,
that's
I don't know. Just a little time on the back porch.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is back porch where you guys hang out over there?
Well, the porch faces south, so yes.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Front porches for hot summertime.
Ooh, I see. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's going to be a big weekend out in PDX biking world.
I think there will be a lot of people putting air in their tires and getting out there.
Yeah, for sure. I was thinking of setting up shop maybe somewhere and trying to get some funny interviews.
Oh, yeah.
I always wanted to do that more, but I don't do it as often
like
as I'd like.
Peninsula Park or
something. I follow some people on like, you know, TikTok or Instagram, whatever, that I really love, like comedians, and like they'll just they just set up and ask people questions. You've seen those.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of my dream pieces of content I want to do, is like have the mic, stand there, just
I used
to
love
randos.
Billy on the Street. Do you know him? He'd be like he'd like run around and chase people with a microphone and be like he would get them all like anxious and crazy, and he'd be like, name a woman. And this is really? Like, I don't know.
That's not going to fly. I mean, I don't know if I could do that.
He's hilarious.
Part of it is, you know,
it can be a little more serious or bike that's related. The thing. Yeah.
I'm not really hilarious. Yeah. So I need to go within my own.
What's your favorite
talent,
bike accessory?
Abilities.
What's your favorite street to ride on? No, I don't know. What are your questions?
I mean, I'd love to like.
Why do you want to go out and ask people questions? Like what?
I don't know. I just want to capture the spirit of everybody out biking. Yeah. So,
okay.
I mean, if I have a video on, then I can ask them non-biking questions because people will see that they're on bikes, but
got it.
I don't want to just ask people random stuff. I want, it has to be bike related. So I got to think of fun ways to do that, that are not just like, where'd you bike today? You know? So anyway, I'll think of something. But all those, also, when you're doing on-the-street interviews with bikers, you have to put a sign ahead of the of where you're stopped, or else nobody will stop.
Right.
They'll just stare at you and smile as they go by. Trust me, I've had this
experience. Yeah, and go to where they're going.
Yeah, and then you're just like a raving lunatic, like with a mic saying, please stop, I want to talk to you. Right? And they're going too fast. So I have to
You got like your comedy routine board. Now, raving lunatic on the side of the road.
Yeah, there you go. But I figure if I put a little sign ahead of time, be like, hey, stop ahead, you know?
So. Do you have a like a little handout or a, you know, free water bottles?
Oh, just do I
Girl
need
Scout
some,
cookies?
Do I need some merch?
Yeah.
Treat would be nice.
A little treat.
Yeah, I could do that. Maybe a little treat. Hand something out.
How many people are going to come to Bike Happy Hour?
Ooh, on Wednesday?
Yeah.
Hopefully a lot.
Is it going to be?
Well, in two Wednesdays from now, we're going to have to hopefully have a big turnout. Looking forward to switching back over to the patio, everyone. And it'll be almost on our year anniversary that we get to go back to the patio. And hopefully if it stays kind of sunnier and warmer, we can be back on the patio, which is really nice. But 2 weeks from now on the 27th, we're going to get a big flotilla together because there is a bike movie being filmed in Portland right now. And I'll talk more about this on the site in a couple of days, probably early next week. And they're really, one of the scenes, they need to have like a huge group of bikers. So they actually came to Happy Hour this week, but I wasn't there. But the word's getting around. It's based on a really cool book that's right here on the shelf, actually. This movie is called A Simple Machine. And it's a book by Evan Schneider. Do you remember him? He wrote the, oh my gosh, what were those really cool zines? The almanac, the something almanac, the bicyclist almanac.
I don't know, Evan.
Oh, he's such good. I'm really bummed that I'm not remembering off the top. It's right here in my box. But anyway, getting off on a tangent, a bike movie's being filmed. They need a bunch of extras. So
cool.
On the 27th, two Wednesdays from now, we're going to get a bunch of people on bike from Happy Hour down to their shoot, which it's not that far away. It's down near Produce Row in the Central East Side.
Okay.
So anyway, something to look forward to there.
Cute.
Lots to look forward to. Partly the fact that Eva is home and we can get back to our regular
Let's hang
in the
out.
Shed rhythm. Yeah. So maybe
except that I'm going to Nebraska next week.
Oh, jeez.
But see, we can record next week. It's good.
Okay, good. Good. Will you be at Happy Hour this coming week?
Hopefully.
Okay, good.
I don't think I have other plans.
All right. Well, everybody.
Tuesday, I'm going bowling.
Well, thanks for telling us. Any other fun things you're doing this week?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have big plans. No.
Okay, good. Sounds like fun. I'll see you. Out there. See you out there Wednesday. Bike Happy Hour, everybody. If not sooner.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please make sure to subscribe and leave a comment and tell your friends about it. And make sure you don't miss any future episodes. Really appreciate all of your support. If you are not a paid subscriber of Bike Portland yet, please become one today at bikeportland.org/support and find out how you can be a part of what we're doing here and pay a little bit in to keep it thriving and surviving. I also want to thank Brock Dittus of Sprocket Podcast fame for our wonderful new theme music. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, we'll see you in the streets.